Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Before we begin, let's hear a quick message from our sponsor.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to employeecycle.com to get your free demo today. That's employeecycle.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable, CEO of the HR Analytics and Recruiting Analytics Dashboard, Employee Cycle. Well, enough about me. Today, we're going to talk about work-life balance for employees. I know a lot of people are always talking about it. We're trying to figure out, does it exist? Does it make sense? Is this a case-by-case thing that all of us need to figure out on our own? But we're actually going to have an expert come in and talk about it today. So would you please help me introduce the founder and owner of Mixtape Talent and people operations consultant, Carrie Bucci, to the podcast. Woo!
Carrie! Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for getting on the podcast. It's an honor to interview you. I really appreciate this.
Well, I've been looking forward to it. You know, I've been so excited that we had the chance to work together with Disrupt HR here in Philadelphia. Super psyched that we're going to have the chance to do it again. So this is an honor and really exciting for me to be here with you. Thanks.
Nice. So, Carrie, before we actually get into the topic, can you please let me, I mean, I already know a little bit about this, but more so for the audience, if you could let them know a little bit about how you ended up in the wonderful world of HR.
Well, that is a great question and a story full of twists and turns, like I think a lot of our HR colleagues could probably say the same. So I started out my career as a copywriter at an ad agency in New York. Never really gave HR much thought. Luckily, got to stay out of the principal's office, so to speak, a lot in my career. So my only interaction with HR as I was coming up in the early part of my career was, you know, benefits, paid time off, you know, when I was interviewing for a job or when I was leaving for a job. So it was really transactional. So as somebody who was a creative, working in marketing, public relations, copywriting, any of those things, I didn't really have a lot of interaction with our HR department. I worked for Yelp. I was the first community manager here in Philadelphia, got that launched in our city, and then went to work for Google as the first Google Places community manager here in Philadelphia as well. And when I got that job, I thought, oh my God, this is it. All my hard work has paid off. It's the holy grail. This is the greatest job in the world. I've arrived. You know, a lot of the ego kicked into, and I felt really, really great about myself. And then I actually started the job and realized about 3 or 4 weeks in that I did not love this job. It was kind of this crisis of identity a little bit for my career identity, because I thought, if I thought working for Google and being a community manager and, you know, working with all of these great events and, you know, businesses and all this cool stuff in Philadelphia, if this wasn't my dream job, what was? And it was really scary and really humbling and really super confusing. And at that time, I was like, okay, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I know at this point in my career, I think I was about 36, 37. You know, I knew enough about spending a lot of time in a job that didn't make you happy. And I decided, okay, well, you know, it's like the end of the night at the bar. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. That's kind of how I felt about working for Google. So I asked around, I looked around, I'm lucky that I haven't had to do a ton of interviewing in my life, you know, and really just started thinking, okay, well, what am I going to do and where am I going to go? And a friend of mine posted on Twitter that the staffing agency that he worked with was looking for a talent agent. I had never worked in talent acquisition before, never worked in a staffing agency, but certainly had worked with them when I was a candidate. And so I thought, okay, well, let me see what the criteria for this job is. Okay, so you have to be able to talk to people. Check, I can do that. You have to know about creative roles. So for this particular staffing agency, they specialized in marketing, creative, those sort of interactive roles with agencies and mid-sized businesses. So I'm like, okay, check, I can do that. You know, you have to be able to sell. Well, I can sort of do that, so check. And then you also have to be, you know, really, really driven and not afraid to take no for an answer. And I have certainly... I've certainly experienced enough of that in my life. So I could check that box off too. So I ended up getting hired as a talent agent at this staffing agency. Within 3 months, they promoted me to branch manager, which talk about crazy because I had never done any of these things before. And then I was with them for almost 2 years. I learned a ton about talent acquisition, about working with hiring managers, working with HR, directors of talent, and then, of course, working with candidates. So I really got that kind of crash course in what it's like to be in the talent acquisition space within HR. From there, as a lot of people who have worked in staffing agencies know, high burnout rate, which I'm sure we'll cover today in our work-life balance chat, I decided to work in-house. So I went in-house to a Philadelphia-based advertising agency as their director of talent. Loved it. But again, looking at work-life balance, looking at internal culture, looking at all of the things that I realized were important to me and what my personal values were, my professional values were, that company just didn't align. Again, great company, just not the right fit for me. So from there, I freelanced a little bit, and then one of my clients hired me to go in-house as their in-house director of talent. And I was there for almost 4 years. And so in that place, I came in as talent acquisition, but really got the opportunity to develop my skills in training and development, in employee relations, in a lot of those different internal programs that really exist and thrive in the space that we all work in. So I was there for almost 4 years. And then again, looking at where you are in your life, changes that happen, work-life balance, priorities, and again, all that great stuff that I'm sure we'll touch on today, decided that it was time to go off on my own. So in September of 2017, I left my full-time job, went out on my own after taking about, I don't know, about 4 or 6 weeks off to travel. And, you know, I went to Sedona and meditated on mountains and did a lot of yoga and really, oh God, it was awesome. It was amazing, you know, and really, you know, got in the right mindset to start this venture. So Mixtape Talent was born in October. I work with primarily my client base is advertising agencies, tech companies, startups, any other creative business. The sweet spot for my client base is usually between 20 and 100 people. A lot of times I'm finding that clients who don't have an internal HR department, I'm a good partner for. Maybe they have one person who does their HR, but maybe that person is more compliance-based, maybe more focused on benefits, payroll, stuff like that. Or I can just come in and enhance what a company is already doing. So perhaps they have this department or a team, and they just need a fresh perspective, a different set of eyes, somebody who is, you know, could ask some questions, challenge them a little bit, and then help them get some programs in place. So do a little bit of everything, and I love it.
Wow. That was an awesome, awesome summary. So yeah, we feel like we really know a lot about how you got there. And that was a really interesting story. So now let's jump into the topic, because people are constantly talking about this with all the stress and anxiety and pressure on everybody to be their best and to do 1,000 things in their life and to be awesome at work and awesome at home and awesome in all these different ways. The question really remains, at least for me, what is work-life balance? And is it even necessary?
Well, I think that is a really wonderful place to start, because I think we can all agree that work-life balance is different to just about every person you ask. So if you were to ask, let's say, a new parent, you know, somebody who has a, you know, maybe has given birth or whose partner has given birth in the last year, when you talk about their work-life balance and their work-life priorities, that's going to be very different than if you are 23 years old, it's your first job out of school, versus you are somebody who is in their, you know, mid to late 40s and now you're an empty nester, or perhaps you are somebody who's ending you know, towards the end of your career, maybe you're in your 50s or 60s, your work-life balance requirements and priorities are going to be super different. So I think that's where, as HR professionals, it gets a little tricky for us because we're trying to put all of these programs in place and be the fixer and come up with these solutions to work-life balance challenges for everybody without maybe first stepping back and saying, okay, so first of all, who are we trying to address? What are the challenges that they in particular are facing? And then what does it make sense for us as an organization to do that's in line with our values and in line with our budget? Because, you know, let's face it, we have to think about all of those things.
Okay. So one of the reasons why a lot of HR professionals love listening to this podcast is because the guests actually come on and give a framework or some type of plan and template that HR leaders can follow to at least start to try to figure out how they can do whatever the topic is about. So for work-life balance, I'm the HR leader that's listening to this podcast and I'm thinking, okay, yeah, work-life balance. We all know what it is in some way, form or fashion. And I would love for my employees to have that, but I have no idea where to start. So let's start at the very beginning. If I think that a lot of my employees don't have work-life balance and I want to fix it, or they already do and I just want to put together a real plan to make sure that I'm checking all my boxes, where do I start? Do I do interviews? Do I look at what's currently happening today? Do I read a book about it? What do I do?
Well, all of those things I think are very viable options. But when I start any new project and especially working with a client, my favorite thing to do is ask. So when in doubt, ask. So, you know, I guess whether it's professional or personal, you know, if you have a challenge at home or you have a challenge with a friend, you know, instead of trying to play psychic and figure it out on your own, I'm always a fan of asking. So in this case, I think it's really important to, you know, first of all, take a pulse check. Some of the things that have worked for me in the past, approach your managers first. They are the people who may have, you know, they're going to be closer to the employees. They're going to probably be in a better position to have their finger on the pulse of how the employees are feeling, what the morale is like, how people are handling the workload and the challenges associated with that. And it's also, I think it's a great way to deepen that relationship that you have with your on the ground manager. So if you are in HR, if you're in senior leadership, go to your managers. Those are the people who are, you know, they're really going to be able to help at least provide the answers that you may need to start building out a program or a process. So those managers may know that, on their particular team, the team doesn't feel well staffed, or perhaps there are five people on a team and two people are, you know, shouldering the work. They're the ones who are there late every night. They're the ones who are there first thing in the morning. They're responding to emails at all hours. They feel guilty about taking vacations. Ask your managers, because they are going to have many more specifics than, even we are all brilliant, amazing HR professionals. And I think sometimes we think that we have the solution to these problems because we care so much and we've invested so much time in education and resource and connecting with, you know, colleagues and everything. But at the same time, we can't discount the fact that we work with people who maybe the answers are different, but the answers are just as valuable and sometimes even more so because they're on the ground with the employees. So asking the questions, trying to get a pulse of what the sentiment is like on the ground is super important. And from there, you can start to break it down. So, you know, it may be that I find a lot of times people feel burned out and they feel like, they're stretched, they're stressed. They may not feel valued because what is happening is coming from the top down. And I don't think that's going to be any secret to any of these folks listening to the podcast today, because we've all seen it. But when people see behavior modeled from the top down, that's what's really setting the stage for the company culture and is really addressing a work-life balance challenge. So for example, if you're, if your VPs or your senior leadership team are responding to emails or sending emails at 11 o'clock at night, they're setting the expectation that, okay, well, I'm doing this, I expect an answer. I've seen a ton of people, and I'm sure you guys have too, that meeting invitations will be sent for the following morning at 9 o'clock, and you won't, you know, the invitation won't go out until 8 o'clock at night. So what does that say? That says to me, you know, well, I know it's 8 o'clock at night, but the expectation is that you're checking your email sometime between 8 and 6 a.m. and that you're going to be there ready to go for that meeting tomorrow morning. That's not necessarily fair, first of all. And it's not setting an expectation that we value your time, that when you're out of the office, that time is your time to, you know, to kind of reset, to spend time with your family, to do activities and pursue activities that kind of energize and engage you to come back the next day and, you know, do an awesome job again for us. So really valuing that time that people have when they leave the office, and then making sure that as a senior professional, you're setting that awesome example so people don't feel that they have to be checking their email, checking their texts at all hours of the night. That's just one very simple place to start.
I want to dig deeper into some of the things you said. So first, you were talking about questions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dig a little deeper. So what kind of questions am I asking? Am I asking, are you spending too much time at work? Or am I asking, would you not like to work as much at home? I mean, to me, this gets very squishy and super gray. Yeah. And if you look at two sides of the spectrum, on one hand, it's we own you as an employer and you do however much work needed to get done to make sure that the company succeeds, whether that takes over your whole life. And then on the other side of the spectrum, I see, oh, you just do the work whenever you want. And as long as it gets done, it gets done. So how do you balance those two ends of the spectrum, but also ask questions that aren't necessarily biased to one of those two, but also that you're it's allowing you to really understand what people want without them just saying, oh, I don't want to work.
Totally. And it sounds like you and I have probably seen a billion episodes of Law and Order or any of those procedural shows where it's like, you know, that's a leading question. So as HR professionals, we have to keep that in mind too. No leading questions. The judge will strike that down. So when you ask questions, and I love that you're thinking about, you know, it's not just about, hey, ask some questions. It's how do you ask those questions? So for example, I think one of the questions used is, you know, how do you feel about working late, or do you like working late, or things like that? What, you know, a way I would recommend would be, tell me about some of the things that are the most important to you in when it comes to work-life balance, or when you think about work-life balance, what are the things that are your top priorities? When I've interviewed people, honestly, I can say with certainty that 9 times out of 10, when I ask people that question during the interview process, you know, tell me, I think kind of the way I phrase it is, what are some of the priorities for you in your next role? 9 times out of 10, people are going to say work-life balance. So that right there says the people who are coming in are really looking for that work-life balance. And then when I ask them, what are some of the reasons that you're leaving or that you're open to new opportunities? A lot of times, probably 8 times out of 10, they'll say work-life balance isn't great at my current role. So you're smart to define what that work-life balance is. So again, if you're asking people what that looks like for them, they could say, well, you know, I want to go back to school to get my master's degree. So having some flexibility, you know, to be able to leave early one day a week would be great. So a lot of people are looking for that. A lot of people are saying, I'd like to be able to keep non-traditional hours. So if that's something that works for your company, perhaps setting up, you know, your hours where you come in, you know, somebody could start their day at, you know, 8 o'clock and then leave early to accommodate their schedule. We see that in a lot of places with younger families, young, you know, working mothers, working fathers who may have daycare. So they can't stay past 5 o'clock, but perhaps they can get in a little bit early, and things like that. So asking people what work-life balance means to them, sometimes it means, you know, I want to take unlimited PTO. And when I've done employee engagement surveys, that's come up a lot. You know, you see it work in a lot of places very well, and you see it work in a lot of places not so well. So, you know, if unlimited PTO is something that your company can support, if you're hearing that feedback from people that we don't get enough time off, or, you know, if I just do my work, that should be good enough. If that's something that your culture can support, great. If not, you know, understanding and explaining to people why that's not possible. Most of the clients I work with, like I said, are advertising or digital agencies. And so unlimited PTO is a little tricky for those industries because everyone's a billable employee. Yep. So that, you know, that's a whole different conversation right there. But, you know, PTO is a big one. And again, going back to the concept of things need to be mirrored from the top down. If, you know, leadership and senior management aren't taking their vacation time, if you as a, you know, a mid-level manager or an entry-level employee, you're going to see that and you're going to say, yeah, it's great that I have 2 weeks, 3 weeks of vacation, but I don't feel like I can take it. You know, my manager never takes it, or there's just too much work to do and I can't do it. So, you know, I always say be a little careful around the PTO concept, because unless it's being mirrored from the top down, that may actually bite you in the butt more than if you just had standard PTO, because people really have to be encouraged to take that PTO.
And when I'm asking those questions, am I asking them face to face? And if it's so, one-to-one, or am I asking people as a group, the whole company, by team, by gender, by department, or am I sending out surveys?
So a lot of that's going to depend on the size of your company, the company culture. If you're a more informal culture, you know, I think there will probably be the tendency to do more in-person conversations around that. If you are a larger organization or a more formal business, then employee engagement surveys. I mean, I'm just a big fan of employee engagement surveys as a whole. And I know that you've had some awesome guests who have really done a lot of great education in that area. So when it comes to work-life balance, an employee engagement survey can be a great place to mine that data from. I'm also a fan of face-to-face conversations. So these can be something that, again, leaning on your managers and looking at how you can continue to engage your managers as wonderful HR resources. These can be things that are coming up during one-on-one conversations too. So as you coach your managers on how to give fantastic one-on-ones, this could be something that, you know, you could say, hey, we are working on a project. We're looking for you know, real data around work-life balance and what people think of how we're doing it, what people want to see more of, what's maybe not as important. It could be a conversation that a manager is having with an employee during a one-on-one about when you think of work-life balance, what's important. You know, I've done focus groups, so you can bring a group of 10 people into a conference room. It could be, you know, kind of like a brown bag lunch situation. It could be a happy hour situation. Sometimes those are, you know, those work a little better for some organizations just because it does encourage people after hours to maybe be a little more honest in their feedback. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's a tricky thing. But there are different methods that could look like. But again, I'm always a fan of a good old-fashioned face-to-face conversation, because there can be so many more questions and challenges that arise from that. If you were to just say, hey, give me three things that you want to see in work-life balance, you're probably not going to get as deep and meaningful feedback as you would like. You know, if you are doing it via employee feedback survey, getting that information and then having some sort of method and mechanism to follow up on that is going to be super important.
Got it. So I've either had a lot of face-to-face conversations or I've sent out a survey. Either way, I've collected all of this data. Now what do I do with it? Do I analyze it to see how many times the same thing has come up? So if most people say we want to be out by 6 o'clock, then that ranks to the top. How do I analyze this data, and how do I really figure out how do I start implementing this? Or is that not the next step? Do I really just sit back, analyze it, talk with managers, talk with management, CEO, whoever? I mean, what do I do next?
So what I've done in the past and what has worked for me, and you know, as with everything, your mileage may vary. I like to take the data. I like to see where the trends are. So to your point, seeing, you know, if most people are saying we want to be out by 6 o'clock, is that, you know, do we have 65% of employees saying that, you know, defined hours in the workday are very important and sticking to that? Is it a mix and a match? So really looking at where the trends are. And then looking at them to find out if it's reasonable. So for example, you may have everyone on the survey saying, we want to be out by 6 o'clock. But if you're an advertising agency and, you know, half of your clients are on the West Coast, is that something that's reasonable? Probably not. So if you are seeing overwhelming data that tells you that people want something that is just unfortunately not a reality, then not only do you have to figure out how to say, okay, so we can't get you out by 6 o'clock, but here's what we can do. You also have to think about what that messaging looks like. So unfortunately, a lot of people in that instance would say, well, half of our client base is on the West Coast, and so there's no way to get out at 6 o'clock. Sorry, suck it up. This is what you signed up for. You knew it when you took the job. The end, right? We see a lot of that, unfortunately. Yep. We don't want to see that. I mean, I don't know about you, but as an employee, that would really not make me feel good about working somewhere. So the messaging of how you convey the good news as well as the bad news is just as important as what you're doing with that data and that information. So it could be, hey, as you guys know, our half of our client base is on the West Coast. So making sure that we're out by 6 o'clock every day, unfortunately, isn't a reality. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to work with the teams, and we're going to make sure that we set up some sort of system that, you know, maybe there's a rotating system where every 2 weeks, the teams that work with West Coast clients can, get out at a certain time on a Friday or something like that. Or maybe you stagger the hours. So if your business is broken up in teams where you have, 10 people on a team and 20 people are assigned to clients who work on the West Coast, maybe those folks have a staggered schedule. So they come in a little bit later, they stay a little bit later. Really looking at how you can be responsive to that and keeping people posted. Again, I'm sure what you've heard in the feedback around employee engagement and feedback surveys is it's not enough to just ask the questions. Once you've asked the questions, you kind of open the Pandora's box, so to speak. So you have to really make sure that you're communicating with people. And making sure that, just like anybody who has a kid is going to know this, just because they've asked for it doesn't mean they get it. So making sure that you're setting expectations properly too. If people are, if you're not able to give them those hours that they want, then what are some other things that you can give them? Is it taking a break during the day? I don't know how realistic it is to expect that, a lot of our companies are going to institute siestas. It has happened, which is awesome. But even just taking breaks during the day. So some people may be feeling that burnout and maybe feeling like, that work-life balance isn't there because they're in by 8:30 and they're working straight through and they're not leaving till 6:30. So encouraging people to take those breaks during the day. And it doesn't just have to be a lunch break at 12 o'clock to eat food. It could be, hey, go outside and take a walk. Or I've worked with places where they'll put coloring books out, if there's a main space or a main gathering space, a lunchroom, anything like that. It may sound a little silly and smushy, but I'm sure we can all point to the benefits of coloring and how good that is for people. Just taking a few minutes to switch your mind to something else. So coloring, having puzzles out in a common space, just something that's really encouraging people to break their day up so they're not just sitting at their desk all day.
This is so awesome. I just have so many things. So many questions. So what happens when you collect all that data and you have 100 employees, you get 100 different answers in regards to what their priorities are for work-life balance? What do you do?
If you have 100 employees, you will probably get 100 different answers. So I would say, first of all, go ahead and expect that. It might help if you are doing a formal employee engagement survey. And Lisa Sordelia really, I think, does a great job at talking about customizing and how you can, make sure that you are getting the right set of data for your organization. It may be that you break it down and you give people options. So if you want to mitigate the chance that you're going to come back with 100 different answers, because obviously you can't implement 100 different things, it'd be a little crazy making, maybe give them a choice. Say, out of these 10 things, what are the 3 things that are most important to you? That's really going to narrow it down. And then, you can go through and look at the data and say, okay, we've got, out of 100 people, we have 80 people saying being able to work from home is important to us. So then you could look at that and say, okay, first of all, one, is this reasonable? Is this something our company can actually implement? If it is, great. Now you got your first directive. So figuring out what does work from home look like for us? What are the things that need to happen? What's the message that needs to go out? What is the, what's the criteria? Do we say that you have to have worked with the company for 6 months and have a thumbs up from your manager in order to participate in a work from home schedule, one day a week? Or is it open to every employee. You know, so breaking it down and only offering a few things that could be possible for your company to implement, that could be a good way to start. It'll actually help narrow things down much faster instead of worrying like, oh crap, we've got 100 different answers and we're never going to make everyone happy this way. So that could be a really good way to go about it.
I was just listening to some of your descriptions and examples of how you can actually give people things that could help them. So for instance, when you were talking about West Coast clients and how some people may need to work till 8, I thought that was interesting because one of my friends is an equities trader and sometimes he has to work on the international markets. Mm-hmm. And so they rotate. And I believe every 3 weeks or so, or every 4 weeks, yeah, he might have to do a couple nights where he's working overnight because like the Asian markets open up when it's 2 a.m. here or something like that. So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, we want to be consistent in the standards that we hold everyone to, but at the same time, we want to also keep in mind that not every one of our employees is working on the same plane. So if we do have, you know, some employees have clients who are, you know, right here in Philadelphia, and so they can meet with them in person, they can go out to lunch, they can have dinner, they can jump on a conference call at any time if they're, you know, if they're in the same time zone or same time-ish zone. And then you have other people like your friend you were just describing that's just not possible. So how do we help create a work-life balance for those folks that is respectful but also is not sending the message that, oh, well, these guys get special privilege. So if you know, if somebody who's on an East Coast team sees somebody on the West Coast team coming in at 10 o'clock every day, you know, the messaging needs to be universal. So the messaging shouldn't just be to that West Coast team that says, hey, now you can come in at 10 and leave at, you know, 7 or whatever that is. It needs to be a universal message to the entire company. So nobody gets fired up for the wrong reasons. You know, there's enough drama that HR professionals have to deal with, right? We have enough people in our office as it is. So, you know, the more proactive we can be in how we communicate with people, the better.
In one of our previous podcast episodes, I had on Keisha Jean Baptiste from the 4 A's, and she was saying how she believes the future of HR will really be around personalization. And mm-hmm. The example that she was giving was the same way that a shopper will go to some type of site, e-commerce site, to buy something, and it knows exactly what you want. So if you've been shopping before for jeans or a certain style of jeans, that's exactly what you see. Whereas somebody else goes to the exact same site, then they see shoes because they keep buying shoes. She was saying that HR might need to get to the same place where each experience for the employee might need to be as personalized as possible. And so when I think about that and I think about what you're saying in regards to work-life balance, and if you had 100 employees, you get 100 different answers, how is that possible? And do you see that? Do you agree with that, that that's where HR needs to go? And how do you make that happen?
I can definitely see us going in that direction. And I think that feeds back into asking questions. So in the example that you just gave, you know, while no one has specifically said, you know, hey, Carrie, what kind of jeans do you want? I've told them. So in my, you know, in what I choose to click on and what I choose to ultimately purchase and what I may have returned, you know, the computer, the World Wide Web, I have told them what I wanted. And so by us as HR professionals asking these questions, it's the same thing. So we're getting the data in a different delivery mechanism, but we're still getting the data. I think it is possible. I don't know how deep we can go with personalization, essentially because as HR, we are, you know, we're in the customer service business. I've always thought of my role as I'm on site with however many clients the company I work with has. So for example, you know, the primary client I'm working with right now, I'm on site with them when I'm in their office with 50 of my clients, as opposed to them, you know, a different team, an account executive or a creative director may work with 5 people and, you know, they're in different businesses across the world or across the country. So I'm on site with however many of my clients, and I am trying to be as available and present and mindful of what they want. But at the same time, it's still a business. So HR, you know, we're there to educate, to support, to innovate, to do all of these really wonderful things to help support the business. But at the same time, our job is to also remember that this is a business. And I think that gets hard. I mean, I'm the first person to raise my hand and say that that gets difficult for me sometimes, because our product isn't, you know, it's not interactive digital advertising, or it's not cars, or it's not cell phones or airplanes, it's people. Yeah. And so it's hard to sometimes separate the commerce from, you know, from the humanity, and that gets difficult. So I do think there is a huge trend towards customization of experience. And certainly there are lots of things that we can do as HR professionals to help make people's experience in the workplace as, you know, feel as natural and personal as possible. I mean, even if you look at, you know, going back to things that we can do during the day to support that aren't going to cost any money other than the opportunity cost. So just, you know, I think I talked about encouraging people to take a lunch break, but, you know, getting up from their desk, taking a walk, you know, that's not only like, hey, we're saying you don't have to be working all the time, but we're also saying, you know, subconsciously, fewer aches and pains from sitting around. That's a good thing. And I don't know about you, but my back is always killing me because I sit in my chair all the time. You know, it's increasing your concentration because you're getting out, you're walking around. When you get back to your desk, your mind is clearer. You're going to be able to focus more on your work. So there's obviously health benefits. There's the mindfulness factor. I know you've had some great people. Anna from On The Goga is really just so wonderful. She's got a lot of great things to say about mindfulness in the workplace. And, you know, so I really love a lot of the work that she's done in that space, but encouraging mindfulness, getting up. And then there's, you know, since I do work with so many creative people, there's the benefit of creativity and innovation. So when you change your scenery, you change your perspective, you change your point of view, you're going to see things that maybe encourage you to think about things in a different way. So sitting at your desk all day is actually really detrimental to creative thinking. And then there's just the socialization factor. So when you get people up and moving around and talking to their coworkers and interacting with people outside of, you know, that 3-foot space of where their desk may be, you're encouraging employee engagement. You are encouraging socialization, building those relationships, and just kind of overall helping to increase happiness. So these are all things that are really going to influence work-life balance as well.
So earlier you said it's all about figuring out what do people want to do with your time. But it's interesting as you brought up the agency space. So the first two jobs that I had out of school were at pretty big agencies, and your time was very subjective in regards to whether or not you could leave at a certain time, because it was all demanded by the clients and what the clients needed. And if it didn't seem like you would break your back or work crazy hours or do whatever the client needed, then you might lose the client. And unfortunately, that's pretty much the culture that most of America really lives by. So, So when you say your time, how should an employer look at and define your time for an employee, knowing that people may have to work nights, weekends, especially in a startup environment or in industry, maybe like a legal industry where you're a lawyer and you're working on some deal, or you're in some space where literally you feel just as connected to working that much that as well as the company does? Because you just know that in order to do your job, you can't do it without working these crazy long hours.
Absolutely. And that's a really great point. I would say that most of the time, people are going to get a sense of how a company handles work-life balance during the interview process. So that's why as a candidate, really go in with the mindset you are interviewing this company just as much as they are interviewing you. That's really important to remember, because this is the space where you're going to get the chance to ask these questions that are going to help you make the decision about if this is the right environment for you, the right culture, not only the right career move or the right, you know, functional position for you, but is this a place where, you know, how is this going to affect my life overall? So you can ask a lot of these questions and you'll get a sense during the interview process. come right out and ask the question sometimes. Obviously you have to be careful, because when I've interviewed candidates and they come out and they say, what are the hours, that, you know, that could take me down a few different paths. That could, first of all, it's a legit question and everyone deserves an answer to that. So there's really nothing to read into if a candidate says, what are the hours of this job? It's the next phase of that where it comes, well, you know, our official hours are 9 to 5. However, you know, because it's a client service business, we find that a lot of times people are going to have to stay a little bit later, maybe be able to respond to emails later. So asking that question and getting that information up front so you are not surprised. I also really encourage candidates to ask people who are in those jobs now. So hopefully, and I'm going to imagine that most of the people who are listening to your podcast are conducting their interviews in a really awesome way. So good job, guys. But making sure that as people interview for specific jobs, they get the opportunity to talk to a good cross-section of people on the teams. So that you're talking to somebody who maybe currently has that job right now. And just say, you know, look, I'm really excited about the opportunity if you're the candidate. But I'd really love to hear kind of like what a week looks like for you in terms of your hours. Do you find that you are consistently here until 7 o'clock? You know, what is there a regular expectation that you are, are you working on the weekends? Are you traveling a lot? Things like that. You can get those answers to a certain extent during the interview process. But I also encourage people who are interviewing candidates to be as honest as possible. If you're worried that you're going to lose an awesome candidate because of the answer that you give to that question, so example, maybe there is the expectation that that person's going to be there till 7 o'clock every night. It is so much better to tell them that now than say, well, you know, sometimes we're here late, but you know, a lot of times we get the worst thing you can do, right? Like, how much would it suck if somebody said that to you? So, you know, I'm always trying to think like, okay, if the tables were turned and I was in that person's chair, how would I want this information to be presented? So let them make that decision for themselves. Give them the honest information. If the hours are tough, let them know that now and let them make that decision. Because either if that's a deal breaker for them, you'll lose them now. But if it's a deal breaker for them, you're going to lose them once they've already been hired, onboarded, introduced to the client, integrated into the team, you know, their benefits have kicked in. Now they're, you know, so you're saving yourself a lot of heartbreak in the end, to be honest up front. And you're certainly saving the candidate from a lot of heartbreak in the end. You have to just be honest.
And I know that a lot of people tie work-life balance to employee burnout, but are there any other even more detrimental effects that a lack of work-life balance can cause? Or are you pretty much solving for employee burnout?
Absolutely. I mean, there are actual real health problems that have been tied into a lack of work-life balance. So things, stress, how people manage their stress, depression and anxiety, that's a real problem. And I know that that's something that as HR professionals, we're challenged with being responsive to that for our employees that we work with. How do we help, support folks who are dealing with mental illness, no matter what that looks like, how serious that is. Certainly a poor work-life balance can contribute and add to anxiety and depression. High blood pressure. So if somebody does not have a realistic and healthy work-life balance, we could be potentially setting people up for real health problems, high blood pressure, increase in heart-related problems. Again, there's the challenge that comes if people are kind of tethered to their desks all the time, they're not moving. So all of the challenges that go with sitting, I mean, I think what they're saying now, sitting is the new smoking, right?
So I have heard that.
Yeah. So if we are as employers encouraging people to, don't take lunch, or if you take lunch, you better eat it at your desk and you better eat it fast and, don't get up and take a walk and don't get any fresh air. You know, we are really contributing to those, actual health problems. I was just reading, there's a place in Thailand called The Dawn, and it is an actual rehab for people who are dealing with workplace burnout, which I thought was just fascinating, right? Yeah. So you hear about, everybody knows about rehabs for, recovery from alcohol addiction, drug addiction, eating disorders, sex addiction, all of that stuff. Now there are rehab centers that are being built to deal with executive burnout. So within this place, they do meditation and they do group, I don't think they call it therapy. I think it's more like a group sharing, where people are really kind of putting strategies in place and talking about their experiences being burned out in the workplace. It's obviously a electronics free zone, so nobody's bringing their cell phones, nobody's bringing their laptops. They're, people are eating healthy. They're encouraged to spend time outside in nature. But this is the first rehab that I've come across that is specifically addressing work burnout issues. And I have a feeling this is going to become a trend because as a society, I mean, this is no breaking news to anyone, but we are just so tethered to our electronic devices. We are, yeah. We have the feeling that what we're doing is never enough. And, there's with social media, again, I feel like a grandma. In my day, we didn't have social media. But, there's that inherent kind of just, I don't think we want to do it, but we're consistently finding ourselves in situations where we are comparing ourselves to other people, whether it's professionally or socially. And so, while we can't solve everyone's, personal spiritual quest to be their best self, there are a lot of things that we can do internally and as HR professionals to help support that. And it really, it really starts at looking at what that work-life balance is, how we can support it, what are the little things that we can do that make a difference? Because as you know, sometimes the sentiment is just as important as the outcome. So if an employee or the employees see that you as, an HR professional or a business leader are really, that you're really invested in this and that you've really taken the time to think about it and think about how what we do and how we do things internally affects their life outside of the office, that goes a long way. It goes a long way to happiness, to engagement, to retention, and then ultimately to recruitment. Because as you know, it doesn't matter what city you live in, it's a small town out there. And candidates talk, employees talk, and these are things that make a big difference. One of the clients I'm working with now has just instituted a monthly R&D session, so research and development, where they allocate like a block of 3 hour, like a 3 hour time block each month for their employees to work on non-billable projects. So that way, people are given the space to learn new things, to try new technologies, to kind of see what's on the bleeding edge without having to feel like, crap, well, I have to be working 40 hours a week. I really want to learn about this new technology. I guess I'm going to have to do it this weekend. Or I guess I'm going to have to stay up until, 2 o'clock tonight trying to figure out how to do this because I could bring it back and maybe this could be really cool on my next project. This company has actually built time in and it's an agency, so their employees are billable. But really looking at how can we do things that support people and help them, make them know that they're valued and feel supported. So there's a lot of stuff we can do. We just have to take the time to ask the questions and then do something about it.
And speaking about taking the time to actually do this, I mean, you know better than anyone else that an HR person is super, super busy, excuse me, and has so many things to do. So now when they hear this as another thing that they need to do, although they know it's important, they're thinking, when the hell am I going to find time to do this? I don't even have my own work-life
balance. Where's our work-life balance? Right.
Right. Let alone create work-life balance for everyone else.
Amen.
But on top of that, if I'm going to put resources, and also aside to this, is I want to know, is are there any costs associated with creating work-life balance for employees? But while I'm actually creating the plan and knowing that, again, I don't even have enough time for myself to work, how do I justify the amount of time that I'm putting towards this to my CEO, COO, CFO, whoever I report to, saying, oh yeah, this is what I'm doing and you should buy into this because outside of the squishy side, not to say that it's not important, but a lot of times HR can be seen as squishy. Here's actual financial costs that can be associated with this, which is why when I ask for resources to make this happen, you shouldn't even think twice. I just want you to sign the check or give me the approval. What are those things, those hard, tangible things that the HR person can take back and say, this is what's costing the business because our workforce doesn't have work-life balance?
So if your organization does exit interviews, which I hope every organization listening does exit interviews, this is a really great time to call on that data. Because a lot of times this is where, unless we're asking these questions up front, this is where we're going to hear about the cost of lack of work-life balance. So go back and look at that information that you got when you were doing your exit interviews with folks. You may hear, it may not be as overt as I'm leaving because there's a lack of work-life balance. But the information may present itself and, well, you know, I have two young kids and it's really tricky for me to feel like, I can attend their school events or, you know, I have to be able to pick my child up from daycare by a certain amount of time. Or, you know, I want to go back to school and I'm going to need to be available at night to do my coursework. I moved and now my house is farther away, things like that. So hearing things like that, those are things that if you were able to catch that data up front, you may be able to solve for that. It may be flexible work hours. It may be work from home options. It may be, there are a lot of different ways that you could solve for those challenges if you had that data up front. So if my CEO was asking me, what's the point? How do we benefit? Basically asking me to justify putting any of these programs into place. If I had that exit interview data to lean on, that'd be the first place I would go. The second thing I would talk about would be the impact on retention, which would be if we don't take care of our people, someone else will. Because as we all know, there are a lot of companies out there who do work-life balance really exceptionally well. Take a look at what they're doing. That's one of the beautiful things about our industry is everyone here does not have to be the smartest person in the room at all times. We can look around at our colleagues, we can look in our industry and say, what does Sear do that we want to be doing? What does, what does Blue Cadet do that's really working? What does, Comcast do that's exceptional that we could figure out how to scale? So there's a lot of things that we can do. We don't have to come up with those ideas. We can look to our peers and our colleagues who are doing these. And that way we have the suggestions to bring in to our CEO. So there will be a real impact on retention if work-life balance isn't addressed. It will affect engagement. So you can look at the productivity. If productivity is dipping, there's a reason. That's not just like, oh, how random and strange that, people don't feel engaged or we're not hitting our numbers or our goals. Work-life balance and having those conversations around that can certainly address it. And then there's the recruitment challenge. So that's something else I would talk to my CEO about is that, again, it's a small town out there. People talk. There's certainly information that's on Glassdoor that candidates can share and will share, as we all know. And a lot of this will address the work-life balance. So if we want the word on the street to be positive and we want people to feel that our organization is somewhere that people want to come and work and spend their time and their career and make that investment, it's our responsibility to make sure that we are making it as positive as an experience, as rewarding as an experience. Work-life balance is right up there with employee development as to what people are looking at in their next role. So nice. A lot at stake there.
Nice. And then last 60-second words of wisdom that you want to give all the listeners about work-life balance. Let's hear it.
Okay. Ooh, the pressure of wisdom. Goodness. I would say take it seriously. Because this is something that, there are a lot of things that are very esoteric and it's hard for us to put ourselves in someone else's shoes. This is not one of them. Work-life balance affects us as well. So what are the things that are important to you? What keeps you engaged in coming to work every day? What are some of those big picture things that make you feel very proud to work at the organization that you work for? What makes you proud to talk to people when you are recruiting or, spreading the word about your company? What are the reasons that you would give someone for why they should choose your company over another company? If you feel that you cannot authentically endorse that, that's a sign that something needs to change. And the change shouldn't just be like, oh crap, I better look for a new job. The change can be, what kind of programs can we put in place? What kind of messages can we send? What support systems can we build for our employees? So everyone working here can honestly say that they have a fantastic experience, that it's somewhere that they want to stay and invest time in their career, and that they want to tell their friends, family, and their network about, because that's what it's all about.
Nice. That was great. And I hope you all were taking notes and definitely taking this back to create work-life balance for your employees. So now, Carrie, I would like to have you come play with me my lightning round, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous.
Let's do it.
All right. So I'm going to ask you the real question. And that question is, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Ah, so we bonded over bread pudding at the last Disrupt HR. I have only recently tried bread pudding. So bread pudding is a new thing for me. I like bread pudding from National Mechanics. That's the only one I've had. So I will say, yes, I like bread pudding.
Woo! You get 2 points.
Yay, I love points.
All right. So the random question is, as we're talking about work-life balance now, and you talked about some of the things that you did before you started your company, which was meditate in the mountains and do all these crazy things and cool things, but how do you unplug? And what do you personally like to do to give yourself work-life balance?
Great question. So I am still doing a lot of meditation. I practice mindfulness meditation. I spend at least 20 minutes a day working on it. I have a meditation group that I go to once a week. So I meditate alone. I meditate with other people. I do yoga. I love yin yoga. So that's the kind that you don't get sweaty. It's where you're really stretching, relaxing, and breathing. Those things really energize me. And I love to read. I like to, this is not going to sound very relaxing, but my favorite podcast, besides yours, of course, is, you're welcome, is a podcast called My Favorite Murder. And it is about murder and serial killers. And somehow it manages to be funny and sensitive at the same time. So that is, that's how I relax. I get on a treadmill and listen to a podcast about true crime. Yeah, huh, right? Twist.
So you literally feel like you're running for your life.
Yes, that's the only way I like to run is when I'm being chased.
All right. So relaxing with murder podcasts.
There you go,
right? I love it. And then the ridiculous question. What's the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard for a company not to want to implement a work-life balance strategy or not really care about it?
Goodness, not implementing a work-life balance. I would say that I've worked for a couple of companies that were reluctant to give any PTO at all, consistently paid their employees under market value because they felt that the employees should be lucky to work there in the first place. And if they didn't like it, they could go and work somewhere else. So that struck me as pretty ridiculous. So I'm going to say that because even on snow days or bad weather days or anything, if you didn't make it into the office, that was counted as a PTO day. So there wasn't a lot of work-life balance happening there. That was pretty bonkers.
Yeah, that place sounds like nuts.
Yeah, it's great. I wish them nothing but the best, though, seriously.
Seriously, disclaimer, even though you guys disclaimer. Suck, I wish you nothing but the best.
Exactly.
Oh, this has been a great podcast, and I've definitely laughed a lot and also learned a lot. So, Carrie, thank you so much for being on the podcast, dropping all these words of wisdom, and really helping all of our HR leaders listening really figure out how they can create a work-life balance strategy for their company. So, thank you, Carrie.
Thank you, Bruce. This was awesome. I had so much fun.
Nice. So where can people find you and Mixtape online?
They can find me at mixtapetalent.com. Also on LinkedIn, Carrie, Carrie Bucci, Bucci.
Great. And we will include all of that in the show notes. So HR listeners out there, for anybody who enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you have any reviews or have any ideas on how we can have a better podcast, how I can be a better host. Maybe you don't like my voice. Well, if you don't like that, I don't know how to change it. But if you have any other reviews or constructive criticism, please leave it. We read everything. Also, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do so and download on your favorite podcast player. And again, HR folks, remember to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks for listening. Later, kids.